This is Saturday with Brian Dowling. I'll be sitting in for Claire Byrne over the next few weeks. We welcome your views on any of the topics we cover, and here's how you can get in touch. You can text us at 51551. Our email address is saturday@rte.ie. Our Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. And joining us now, Phil Hogan, Minister for Environment, Community and Local Government, Frank Flannery, Fine Gael's Master of Electoral Strategy, Michael O'Regan, Parliamentary Correspondent with the Irish Times, and Mairead McGuinness, MEP for the Ireland East constituency. Phil Hogan, it's Fine Gael's weekend. But I suspect that many people, when they look at the budget next Tuesday, will think that this will be draped in Labour's brightest colours. They've got what they've wanted. They wanted an adjustment of $2.5 billion. What happened?
Well, I think if people also reflect, Brian, in relation to where we've come from since the last Fine Gael National Conference in Ardesh, where economic sentiment is improving. And you'll recall that 2 years ago, when the government took office, that there was a possibility of defaulting on our national debt. Ministers didn't even know that the troika were in town. And there was a huge level of despair. So what Fine Gael are looking at today at this conference is not about internal ministries or anything like that in the context of the budget per se, but they're talking about how we can get on with the job of restoring our economic and financial independence and getting people back to work.
But we've all seen from a couple of weeks back how several Labour ministers were making the point that they wanted to see the €3.1 billion adjustment brought down something to the region of where we are now, €2.5 billion. Is there not a real sense that they have actually stamped their ownership on this budget?
Well, I think all of the ministers are working very collectively with the agreement of the Troika and the European Commission in order to ensure that, you know, the sacrifices that people have made are in tune with what we were required to do under the bailout programme, but no more than that. There's no point in actually, you know, asking the people of Ireland to take further sacrifice than what is necessary to get us out of the bailout programme. We are going to run ahead of our target by the end of next year, 4.8% deficit. We are going to hit our target of 3% in 2015. Interest rates and stability in terms of our economy is certainly going to be reflected in that. And this is creating the positivity that we see in the hall today in terms of the economic sentiment that we see at every community level, that things are improving. But there's a long way to go.
Mairead McGuinness.
Well, I was just interested in your question because I've just run into studio. I was listening to Minister for Finance, Michael Noonan, deliver a very considered paper to delegates. And it is the Minister for Finance's budget, listening to all of his ministers, Fine Gael and Labour. And as Minister Hogan said, we have hit our targets. There are objectives set, and this budget will reflect the achievement of those objectives. I think that is very clear. And it was quite striking as well. Richard Bruton spoke this morning of a spirit of fight back in the country. And you could sense it among delegates. And we got a round table of our deputies and senators from all over the country. And while there are very difficult issues in regions, there is that sense that the recovery is happening. It is slow. And if you listened to the minister's speech just now, he doesn't intend to do anything to accelerate and damage that recovery. And he's doing it very conscious of the social implications as well.
Phil Hogan, last night the Taoiseach said there were two real objectives with the budget. One was to continue the work of the fiscal adjustment and thereby exit the bailout before the end of the year, and to put the focus on jobs. But a lot of people who are listening to this programme or awaiting the budget next week will say, will I be better off or will I be worse off after this budget? And if you're still taking €2.5 billion out of the economy, for many of them, they may well be worse off.
Well, Brian, whether we like it or not, the government has inherited a very difficult situation, and we inherited a programme of austerity, a programme that was very difficult for families, and the stress that it put on families is enormous. But we have to hit our targets, or otherwise people know that it's going to be an awful lot worse. If we don't hit those targets, we don't want to be in a position like Cyprus or Greece or Portugal or Italy. We want to have stability in our country. That's how the jobs are flowing in at 3,000 net per month. We, you know, 250,000 jobs were lost in the 3 years before we came into office. So people want hope about their economic situation. They want a job, and we want to make it more attractive for people to be able to take up a job rather than actually being on welfare.
Michael O'Regan, in the final few days into the run-in before the decision to the Cabinet meeting tomorrow night on this budget, where do you see the balance line between Fine Gael and Labour in the makeup of this budget?
Well, all coalitions are a political marriage of convenience. Both will claim victory. Michael Noonan, a short time ago, Brian, said in his own inimitable linguistic style that all remains to be done to complete the budget are the bits and the bobs. Now, the bits might be easy, the bobs might be a bit complex when they're gathering government buildings tomorrow night. After tea time, the bobs could be the, you know, the getting over those hurdles. But I think there's a bit of a political game going on here. Labour, absolutely, you know, lambasted in the polls. They're taking credit for the fact that the 3.1 is down to 2.5. Fine Gael talking about fiscal responsibility and all of that. I'm not too sure that's impacting, by the way, on the public. And even whatever the figure is, and we know now the figure is 2.5. At the end of the day, unless the public feel that you know, their own personal economic circumstances are improving, they're not going to be too impressed. The other thing is this: there is a slight danger here for the government, Brian, that there might be a presumption now among the electorate that the budget might be that little bit easier than what will emerge on Tuesday. And that actually could have a negative impact on both parties.
Well, from the point of view of ordinary families, Phil Hogan, yeah, will they be worse off, or is this going to be broadly neutral?
I think what your people want to hear from next week's budget is another example of where Michael Noonan is able to bring in policies of a sectoral interest that are actually going to promote economic development and job creation. The biggest antidote to poverty and to people that are less well off and under pressure is to make sure that they get a job or be able to retain their job. And Ireland has come an awful long ways in the 2 years in order to ensure that we have the stability and the positive economic sentiment to make sure that that happens. And what we are doing as a country then and as a government to make sure is that we have the key infrastructural pieces in place to ensure that when the upturn comes in a major way next year and the year after, as we see from the Economic Social Research Institute in the last week, where growth is now back, where positivity economically is back, and people have a chance of getting a job again.
The other thing, Michael, on this, of course, the Minister could enlighten us on this. The Fine Gael ministers are looking across the Cabinet table at the very negative body language between Eamon Gilmore and Joan Burton. And, of course, that relates as much to politics as regards policy. And I don't know how negative that body language is evident to the other Fine Gael ministers, but it must lead to a certain amount of heat at the Cabinet room.
No more than they have. I suppose all sorts of speculation in relation to the budget. I don't notice these things about body language. Maybe I wouldn't be good at it anyway. But the reality is that people collectively around the Cabinet table are trying to do what they were elected to do by the people with a very strong mandate, was to get us back our economic and financial independence that Fianna Fáil lost us and get people back to work.
Frank Flannery, you're the person in Fine Gael who, most of all, has to be attuned with the public mood. You're the person tasked with planning their elections. How do you think the public is going to take this budget? Where does this fit in the sort of political cycle in the run-in to the next, to the local European elections next year and the general election in 2016?
I actually think the economic cycle and the political cycle are actually coming together in quite a benign way now for Fine Gael and Labour in government. And in many ways, this is the first time. As you know, there's a long history of these two parties having to manage Ireland out of a recession, which they inherited, because they typically in the past got elected when the country had gone into trouble. On this occasion, the country was already well and truly destroyed before they got the job of reconstructing the country, and now they're successfully managing it. And I actually do believe this, which I have nothing to say about electoral strategy for the Labour Party, but I would have thoughts about it from Fine Gael's point of view, but I do believe both parties will live or die together on this one. I think Fine Gael's message to the electorate is we were given a terrifically difficult job to do. We have tackled it with ingenuity and with the absolute very best of our energies. And we are making headway and we're beginning to achieve results. Message for next year, you're beginning to see the results. The jobs are coming back into the economy and the sap is rising in the nation. Without a shadow of doubt, that is my view. I think if I were the Labour Party, I would have a similar narrative. And I wouldn't be saying my role in government is to control the wild mad dogs of austerity, Fine Gael. I'd be saying together the two parties are doing the job.
Is there not a sense, perhaps, Frank Flannery, that from the Labour Party's point of view, that Fine Gael, in agreeing with the 2.5 billion euro budget adjustment, there's a touch of Fine Gael perhaps feeling the pain of their coalition partners over the last couple of months?
Well, Fine Gael, we feel the pain of our coalition partners and we feel the pain of all of the people of Ireland. Does anyone in Fine Gael like to have to do a lot of the measures we have had to do because job needed to be done? No, but the essence of patriotism and the essence of effective government is you do what needs to be done to get the job done and get the country back in its feet. Of course we sympathise with Labour, but do you think it's any different for a Fine Gael backbencher or a Labour backbencher or a Fine Gael minister or Labour minister? They have the exact same experiential effect in the country and they actually are in the same boat.
Although you would have to say that there are a certain number of Fine Gael TDs and backbenchers who would be far more pro-austerity than anybody on the Labour Party side.
So there's nobody pro-austerity. People are pro-doing what has to be done to put the country right. Nobody likes austerity or wants austerity.
Mairead McGuinness, can I just ask you, Michael Noonan indicated a few days ago that the European Commission were broadly supportive of the strategy for this budget, and that's the European Commission. But there are many others out there who, from the early part of this summer, wanted to see us complete the process with a €3.1 billion adjustment. So is there a danger that we may alienate some of those, such as the ESM, people in the European Central Bank?
No, I don't think so, because I think Michael Noonan and the Taoiseach and the government have credibility. And if Michael Noonan argues, which he does very effectively, that this adjustment is what we can live with in order to achieve our targets, then he will be believed and is believed. He has huge credibility. I mean, Europe looks to Ireland as being a country that has taken itself from a very dark place. This new government, which is 2.5 years in office, did things that perhaps could not have been done elsewhere because they told the people the truth. Leo Varadkar mentioned that in his speech this morning and there was a huge round of applause for it. And the truth can be unpalatable, but if you tell people the facts and tell them what you need to do, and this argument about the word austerity, I like to say it's restructuring. Austerity has very bad connotations, but if you listened last night to Dennis Brosnan talking about restructuring agencies of government, that we have too many of them and we can do it better, and that makes for a better Ireland, it allows businesses to grow and it allows for job creation. So your question, I'm afraid, is, and the answer I would give, is that Michael Noonan is in contact with everybody that's involved in our rescue package and they are behind what he does because of the credibility of his ministry.
Phil Hogan, one of the key points underpinning the decision to go for the €2.5 billion budget adjustment is an expectation that next year we will see better economic growth than we've seen over recent years. If that doesn't happen, is this not a big gamble that come this time next year, the public will be looking at perhaps steeper cuts in spending and more taxes to make up the gap if we don't get the economic growth?
Well, God forbid, Brian, that your narrative, actually, what you've just said, will come true, because you were actually advocating greater austerity. What we are trying to do here is build on the economic sentiment that's out there because of the tough decisions that the government have made with the Irish people supporting them in the last 2.5 years to ensure that we do have stability in our country, that Ireland is now, its reputation is very much enhanced, and that people that look into this country about investing in this place now know it is a safe place to do so, unlike what it was like 2.5 years ago. So I think that people reluctantly around the country who may be opponents of the government are saying, well, fair play, at least they're making an honest effort in order to get us back in our economic independence. They are now know that we're heading in the right direction in terms of balancing our books in line with the TRICA programme. We're in a position where jobs are being created at 3,000 a month again. Now, that hasn't happened for a long time in this country, and we're not going to fritter it away. And Michael Noonan and Brendan Howland, who are interfacing with the TRICA, are not going to throw the hard-won gains of the Irish people that we've done over the last 2 years. They're not going to throw it away in any budget this year or next year.
Michael, is there a sense, if you listen to what Leo Varadkar was saying earlier this morning, and indeed what Phil Hogan and Michael Noonan are saying, that they're really preaching to the converted down here in Limerick?
Oh yeah, the mood is very upbeat here in Limerick. I mean, the mood among delegates, is, I've been talking to them last night and this morning, very upbeat. Fine Gael is in power. I mean, this is a very good conference for Fine Gael. I mean, look at last night, for instance, Enda Kenny praising Michael Noonan, praising Richard Bruton. Michael Noonan, who dropped Enda Kenny when he was leader, sent him to the backbenches, praising Richard Bruton, who challenged him for the leadership, getting a very, very good response from delegates. Fine Gael is in power, doing reasonably well in the polls, given the circumstances. I'd be inclined to agree with Frank Flannery, actually, in the long term, that Fine Gael and Labour will live or die on the economy. And the next general election, a while away, Brian, but it's going to be quite a different election to previous ones in the sense that there will be no obvious alternative. Up to the last election, you had either a Fianna Fáil-led government or a Fine Gael-Labour government. Next time, the outgoing government will probably say, look, we did such and such with the economy. If there's an economic upturn, Labour's fortunes could improve dramatically.
Frank Flannery, just looking at where Fine Gael party is at the moment, you've lost two referendums so far. You've lost a number of TDs and senators to the Reform Alliance group, and you're polling somewhere between 8 and 10 points down on the 36% of support that you got in the general election. It's not a good place to be in at this stage in the government's life cycle, is it?
I must say, I have a slightly different view of the world. We won four referendums, which I think is very good batting. We've won two-thirds of the ones we've run. And we've passed all the important ones. For instance, last week, getting the new court established was the absolutely key event that day, because that's going to make a huge difference to Irish citizens and to Irish
businesses. Presumably when the Taoiseach said that the Seanad referendum all the 2 years ago, or from 2010, was a personal leadership initiative, presumably that was a key issue as well.
It was. It's one of 100 personal leadership initiatives Enda Kenny has taken. And the public have given their view on that one, and they've decided on balance they'll stick with the status quo. But they do want that status quo changed. But I would have thought that from a Fine Gael point of view and even from the government's point of view, they have a really good message to give. The Fine Gael polls are holding very solid. We're solid in the high 20s across a whole range of polls. And far as I'm concerned, after 2.5 years in government we've had, with taking all of the tough stuff on, the public have stayed with us. They have not turned against us. I noticed even the Minister for Finance going into Croke Park there for the All-Ireland hurling final was the Dublin populace were joking and bantering with them. And they clearly found them an acceptable.
Just on your point.
I remember ministers for finance and former governments who wouldn't want to be seen in the streets outside Croke Park in the middle of a recession. The public know that the government has to do a job and are doing it well and are staying with us. When we come to the elections, we have a good message to say, and we will be able to say, like honest politicians, that we were given a job to do, and to our absolute best we've done it, and we will ask for a mandate to continue that job. And have I any doubt that we will get that mandate? Absolutely none.
Michael O'Regan, in the last general election, Fine Gael were on 36%. They won 46% of the Dáil seats. They had a seat bonus of 16 seats. If they continue to poll in the mid-20s, that's a lot of seats gone before the if 2016.
Well, it is on current polls, but general elections, referendums are very different to general elections. Even opinion, I mean, look at the earlier opinion polls on the referendum, quite changed. The next general election will be all about the economy. And I think you could even see always, you might even see a dramatic shift, we'll say, midway through the campaign. Look, go back to 2007. It looked as if the Mullingar Accord was about to work, Fine Gael and Labour would go into power. And then towards the end of that campaign, the electorate changed their minds. They thought a soft landing was coming, a bit naive. Well, we were all a bit naive about the soft landing. And they switched back to a Fianna Fáil-led government. So I think interpreting the polls now and placing them in the context of a general election is an impossible thing to... The other thing is, of course, the unquantifiable thing is successive polls are showing up to a third of the electorate undecided, perhaps 25% voting for independence. Now, when that one third would get off the fence, as it were, in a general election, anything could happen.
Marie McGuinness.
It's just interesting about the independence, because we have some in the European Parliament, but I always say to people that you have to be very careful. People are elected not for themselves, they're elected to do a job. And what political parties do is pull together in a cohesive way policy development and formation. In the European Parliament, the independents make a lot of noise. An awful lot of noise, and maybe get an awful lot of airtime. But if you were to ask what did they achieve and how effective they are, they're not. So I think people will make very considered judgments. In polls, they might vote for an independent, but when you come to making a decision about the future for my children's education and their job potential, you're going to look to parties that can deliver, not independents with single issues or indeed general views that suit everybody, but actually leave a bitter taste in your mouth when you give them power.
They could hold the balance of power, of course.
Phil Hogan, just on another issue. Over the last couple of weeks, particularly during the Seanad referendum campaign, there was a lot of emphasis on the whole issue of political reform, both reform of the Seanad for those who were campaigning to save it and reform of the Dáil. What is going to happen?
Well, we've already carried out a lot of reform in the last 2.5 years. We've reduced the number of TDs. We're going to have a local government reform. It's part of a policy document that we published last October, and the bill to enact that will be published very shortly, where we, instead of 114 local authorities, we'll have 31, and where the citizen will be put first. And we have a lot of policy change in water, in waste and in building control. You saw during the week where Priory Hall now has been resolved as an issue by the, for the residents, even though the government did not were not directly involved in it. There was a moral obligation in order to do something for those unfortunate people that were left high and dry by the type of building regulations or what passed for building regulations by the previous government. And we're going to do the same for Pyrite and unfinished estates. So there's a lot of reform going on in the system and a lot of change. And I suppose it's change for the better in terms of putting the public and the citizen in terms of their money, getting better value for it and putting them at the first and foremost in the policy and then looking at the structures afterwards.
Your colleagues who have gone to Reform Alliance, are they gone, or is there any prospect of them coming back in?
Look at that. People make very difficult decisions in government, as you know, and as an, you know, 95% of the people in the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party voted for the government. And they knew when they were voting for the government what they were doing. Equally, people that have to make tough decisions about voting against the government know why they're doing it and their rules there. And the National Executive decide these things if people want to apply for re-entry in the future. All those matters can be considered. But I don't think there's any evidence of that at the moment. And there is evidence, on the contrary, that people want to, in the Reform Alliance, they want to oppose government policy and oppose Fine Gael policy.
Frank Flannery, are you already working on the basis and plans for those constituencies where those TDs were?
We're working on the basis of plans for 2016 general election for every constituency in Ireland, I guarantee you, and we will have a very cogent...
But are you counting out those TDs who have gone to Reform Alliance?
Not necessarily, I take what the Minister has said. Look, 2.5 years is an eternity in politics. Let's see what happens. We are working very closely now for the local and European elections next year, and the party is very ambitious for both of those elections, and we do not see ourselves yielding any ground to any other set of parties in either of those elections.
Phil Hogan, one of the other issues, of course, that's looming is the prospect of a cabinet reshuffle. Do you see it this side of this year or early next year?
Well, I understand the Taoiseach makes those appointments, and I hope that will continue to be the case. We're doing a very good job together, and it's a pleasure to work with him and all of the other colleagues in government. And I'm very satisfied with where I am at the moment as Minister for Environment, Community and Local Government, doing a very tough job for the last 2.5 years.
But would you be open to the position of EU Commissioner if that was to become available?
I look forward to whatever the Taoiseach has in mind, but I'm perfectly happy where I am.
Mairead McGuinness, can you see Phil Hogan in Europe next year?
I can, yeah. I think you certainly see him. He'd be taller than most.
Can you see him sitting in the EU Commissioner's office?
I can. I'll tell you why. Because this man has made incredibly tough decisions. He has not blinked, and he has gained the respect of the electorate. They mightn't particularly love him all the time, to coin a phrase, but they've certainly respected the fact that when it came to making tough decisions, he staged the course. And in the Commission, we need that type of leadership as well. And you're going into European elections, and I'm glad somebody mentioned it, Europe will be just as important as national issues, because economic recovery in Europe is vital to Irish economic recovery.
OK, I'd like to thank Phil Hogan, Mairead McGuinness and Frank Flannery for joining us. We'll be back with more on the budget. We'll also be asking if Ireland's corporation tax rate faces a new threat from Germany, and the plan for free GP care for the under fives. Will it happen? Join us after this short break. Welcome back. I'm joined now by the Minister for Transport, Tourism and Sport, Leo Varadkar, Minister of State at the Department of Finance, Brian Hayes, the Minister for European Affairs, Pascal Donoghue, Fine Gael's Limerick City TD, Kieran O'Donnell, and staying with us, Michael O'Regan of the Irish Times. Leo Varadkar, one of the issues that has dominated the budget discussions over recent times has been the 9% VAT rate for the hospitality sector. And I suspect that many people working in that sector will be looking to you to hold the line on that. The expectation, of course, that it would be increased back to 13.5%. Can you deliver on that one?
I don't know. We'll find out on Tuesday morning, really. A lot of the tax measures won't be finalised until the last moment, and really can't be for various reasons. But I think everyone concedes that it has been a success. There are 14,000 more people working in that sector than there were 2 years ago. But I think also everyone understands that it was a temporary measure funded by the levy on private pensions, which ends or is due to end in a year or so. So really, it's kind of in the mix as one of the measures that might be extended, or perhaps we'll have kind of a halfway house, and maybe not the full increase to 13.5%. But needless to say, I'm doing my best to retain it for as long as possible, or as much of it as possible as I can.
It was one of those issues, of course, that did command cross-party support because it proved successful. And presumably the pressure on you will be to deliver it and keep it at 9%. Because if jobs, the Taoiseach made the point last night that jobs is the key issue.
Yeah, well, that actually didn't command cross-party support because it did have to be paid for. So it was in the jobs initiative.
But it does
now. Well, yeah, like it's one of those things, though, when it actually came to making the tough decision of raising revenue elsewhere in order to provide a tax cut in another area, in a jobs-rich area, it actually was opposed by, I think, I'm pretty sure it was opposed by Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin, who voted against the jobs initiative. And interestingly enough, in their pre-budget submissions, they both argued for retaining it, but didn't actually seem to work out where they would find the money to do that.
Michael O'Regan, you've been listening to both the Taoiseach on this issue last night, and you've also been listening to Michael Noonan recently. Do you detect any differences between the two?
I do, actually. I detect at least a difference in emphasis. Now, Phil Hogan told me earlier that he can't read the negative body language between Eamon Gilmore and John Burton at the Cabinet. That's presumably because he's reading his brief on the environment. But anyway, but I do study body language, perhaps not very well, Brian. And the Taoiseach, much more upbeat last night. Michael Noonan, interestingly, a short time ago in the conference, used the word temporary, which the minister used there. So, also, in the Dáil recently, finance questions, I thought the minister was quite negative about it. So it remains to be seen what happens. I do think, given the cost involved, the scale of it is under threat.
Leo Varadkar, just on that issue, is the key issue here the actual cost of maintaining that 9%?
Yeah, it is. Now, you'll get different figures as to how much it has cost, but in every estimate is in three figures. You're talking, over 100 million. So it was an expensive measure, and it did, it has delivered. But it was there as a temporary stimulus. And, people will argue with some reason that if you provide a stimulus to one area and it works, why not then provide a stimulus to another area and see if it could work too? The counter-argument to that, which is one that I've been making, is that stimulus does work, but if you withdraw it too quickly or too suddenly, you then risk a rebound effect where you actually do harm, and that's what we have to try and avoid.
Kieran O'Donnell, you're obviously a local TD here in Limerick. What's your sense of the public mood in the run-up to this budget?
I think the public mood is that they're supportive of the measures that as a government we've taken in terms of ensuring that we stabilise the finances. Obviously, in every case, they're worried about any budget, but I think the fact that extra savings have been found this year in the order of 600 million, which brings the adjustment down to 2.5, I think gives people, I suppose, some level of reassurance that we're moving in the right direction. Any budget is difficult, but I think that our platform here this week has been about jobs. And that's something in Limerick here is top of my agenda. The idea of delivered 1,000 jobs here since we've come into government. But I think it's very much about striking the balance. They know we have to make tough decisions, that it's a fair budget. I think that's something you will see on Tuesday.
Brian Hayes, it's not your department, there is the Department of Health, but this whole issue of providing free GP care to the under fives, it was flagged earlier in the summer. Where does that stand now?
Well, we'll have to wait and see in the budget what exactly falls out in terms of whether the proposal runs or not. It's worth saying, though, Brian, and people forget this, I mean, we campaigned on a very strong platform on health reform on the area of universal healthcare. And I know it's something that the Labour Party feels strongly about as well. The argument about trying to get more and more people to use primary healthcare rather than coming straight to A&Es makes sense in terms of the capacity running through our health system. Whether we can do this or not, we'll have to wait and see. I think it will be a very important signal that the Fine Gael Labour plan on universal health care is being delivered on an incremental basis, on an age cohort basis. I think every single year we see an extra, 25,000 people over 65 as an age cohort going into, thankfully living longer. And that provides huge pressures on a demand-led health service. So these are issues that we'll have to decide over the next few days. I think in all of this, I mean, look at this crisis has gone on longer than the Second World War. People need to be able to see that we're getting near the end of it. And I think if this can be the budget that will signal not only our return to the markets and our credibility as a country in terms of a balanced budget into the next number of years, but that there's hope and there's sort of light at the end of the tunnel, I think people will buy into that and accept that, because there is confidence. As you go around, my part of Dublin, people are looking for opportunities again. We haven't lost everything despite the fact that we've gone through this appalling crash. And I think that's the kind of confidence we need to instill as we take the country on.
Pascal Donoghue, do you think that the idea of having free GP care for the under fives, do you see any difficulties with that? Because there are people out there who argue that there are a lot of families who are wealthy enough to pay for their care for their younger children, and there are those who are in more difficult circumstances who can't get medical cards for older children, and indeed some teenagers and adults who are very ill.
Well, the reason it matters so much is because of the signal that it sends out regarding the value that society places on children, on their health, and making sure that if any family ever does have any difficulty with the health of a child, that financial cost is not an impediment to dealing with it. From working in my constituency of Dublin Central, the bills that people talk to me the most about in terms of the worry that they face is unexpected costs in relation to going to see the GP, having to bring a full family into a doctor. And then of the other one, of course, is the way energy prices have gone up in recent years. And the reason why the proposal, as Brian talked about there, is so important, that is, if it is implemented over time, it will signal our ability to go to a model of universal health insurance, where cost plays a far smaller role than it used to in terms of people's ability to access healthcare. And while that's very, very important in terms of our economy, obviously the reason it's far more important is in terms of the health of family and the health of children.
Leo Varadkar, of course, you were a GP, and I was listening yesterday, I think it was Dr. Ray Wally, the chairman of the GP committee for the Irish Medical Organisation, was making a point that at a time when there are scarce resources, that providing free GP care for the under fives may not be the best use of those scarce resources.
Well, it is a time of scarce resources, and notwithstanding that, more people in Ireland have medical cards than ever before. It's roughly 2 million people, 43% of the population. Now, some people will say that's because of high unemployment, but actually unemployment was much higher in the 1980s and we didn't have 2 million medical cards. So,
although we've all seen a lot of criticisms in recent weeks, particularly over the whole issue of discretionary medical cards, and a lot of people saying that they're losing them or not getting them.
Yeah, we have. And I know Mr. Riley is going to have a high-level meeting with HSE officials next week to iron that out. But I suppose going back to medical cards under fives, it's very important in two areas. I hope it can be delivered, by the way. It's by no means certain that it will be in the year ahead. But the two things, two areas where it'll really benefit, I think, are kind of working families, families who are working, who aren't availing of any social welfare, but actually aren't that well off. And for them, you know, €50 to see the GP or paying for medicines makes a big difference. It makes them, in some cases, no better off than people who are on welfare, and actually discourages some people from going from welfare into work. So I think it'll make a big difference for that group of struggling young families.
Michael O'Regan, earlier today, Billy Cathar, the Fianna Fáil spokesman on health, he was making a point that there was a real danger that this could become simply a headline-grabbing proposal in the budget to have free GP care for all the under-fives.
I think there is a danger, perhaps, when in a time of economic recession, when any government, any minister introduces what will be a tough budget, that you throw in some little sweeteners. But I think the point made that at a time of economic crisis, can you afford this, notwithstanding the very positive measure that it would be? But I think debate on issues like that, Brian, emphasises one thing that's clear to me as well from delegates here this weekend, that come Tuesday afternoon, the referendum and the Shannon will be a footnote to recent political history. We'll be talking about health, education, taxation. And Dermot Ferriter, the historian, has an interesting piece in the Irish Times today about the history of referendums. Mm-hmm. And in 1959, when the people sent Dev to the park but rejected his proposal to abolish PR, Sean Lamass took over. He led the best government in the history of the state, a minority government, described at the time as Lamass's overall minority. And interestingly, by the way, in relation to the dynamics of the current government, he showed a toughness Mr. Kinney has shown. For instance, he accepted the resignation, this is way back in the 1960s, of his Minister for Agriculture at the time. But come Tuesday afternoon, all about the finance.
Colonel O'Donnell, do you detect much demand for free medical care, for free GP care for children under five? Or would you rather see that money spent more in a more targeted fashion?
I think it's part of an overall universal healthcare policy for Fine Gael, and it's something that is there that we're going to look to bring in. I think I very much welcome the fact that the Minister for Health is meeting with the HSE and the discretionary medical cards. It is an issue. I think I welcome the proactive measure. And I think once again, what you're looking to honour, you're looking to bring in something that's fair. Lee have made reference to people that are on, we'll say, that might be on a lower income, that do not qualify for medical cards and would have young children. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to strike the balance at all times. But I think the intervention by Minister Riley today in terms of discretionary medical cards is a very welcome one, it's a very proactive one, it's a very positive one. I've no doubt it will yield results.
Brian Hayes.
There's a group of people out there who are working and clobbered on tax because of what's happened in the country. And many of those people have to think twice before they can actually afford to bring their kid to a doctor. We need to sort of realise that there, as Leo said, there's a group of people who are working there consistently, who are paying their mortgages, getting through all of this very difficult period of time. They have to see some light at the end of the tunnel. And I do think this is a targeted measure. But more importantly, it ties into what we're trying to do on the primary healthcare side, which is to get more and more activity going on in local communities on medical care rather than clogging up the
NHS. I want to move on, but just in relation to the whole issue of universal health insurance, there are many people who are deeply involved in looking at how that might be put together. And many of them whom I've spoke to would argue that the easy part was supposed to be free GP care for everyone and primary care centres. And we're not anywhere near the completion of that phase yet.
Oh, I think we are. I mean, on the primary healthcare centres, a lot of these are to be delivered privately, as you know. I was in London recently speaking to about 250 bankers trying to get support for the next range of PPP projects. And a lot of the bundles there are on primary healthcare. We need to see people investing in that. All these things are historically slow. The health on the health reform, it is historically slow. But that's why we recognised that a key first step towards universal healthcare has got to be access towards your local GP. And I think we are. I mean, let's not, you know, James Riley's had one of the most difficult jobs to do in government, if not the most difficult job to do. He's had a situation where effectively, what is it, 10% of his total budget has been knocked out because of what's happened. And people have had to work harder and longer. The throughput going through all our acute hospitals has gone up. And I think despite all of that difficulty, we have seen reductions in the waiting lists.
I want to just move on. Pascal Donohue, are you worried by the reports coming from Berlin? Because we see where Angela Merkel's CDU is in negotiations with the opposition party, the SPD, and they want to put our corporation tax rate very, very firmly back on the agenda, and they want to link it to any deal on retrospection for bank recapitalisation.
I think we just have to set those discussions in a bit of context. I mean, there's an internal negotiation taking place there in Germany regarding the formation of a new government. We have to be very sensitive to that. We wouldn't take it too kindly if another country was making an intervention into our government being formed as we discuss this. But I just make a few general comments overall in terms of the view towards Ireland. The first one is the last statement that was made officially by Germany in relation to what was happening in Ireland was when Chancellor Merkel made a number of comments recognising the huge sacrifice the Irish people have made shortly after she gained her historic re-election. And this has been backed up by the policy that's happened within Europe recently. And I point to three examples of that. The huge achievement in relation to tearing up the promissory notes. The acknowledgement that on a case-by-case basis, the fund that would be used to support countries in the future could be used for banks as well. And then secondly, we've heard it again and again, the reference by leaders within Europe that what happened in Ireland is a special case. And specifically what they mean by that is our country entered a bailout programme at a time when many of the tools that are available now were not available to us then. And that has been emphasised clearly.
But presumably, from Chancellor Merkel's point of view, forming a stable government, I would imagine, will be a far bigger priority for her than any issue around Ireland's corporation tax rate. Presumably, that would be secondary to her forming a new government, which could be potentially very, very damaging for this country.
And we should acknowledge in all of this that the formation of a stable government within Germany is in the interest of everybody, Ireland and everybody else across Europe. But specifically in relation to the corporation tax issue there, this government has made clear again and again that the ability to set our own corporation tax rate is a core part of our national sovereignty, as it is in relation to other parts of our tax system. That was recognised most recently in the protocols of the Lisbon Treaty, where that's recognised there. Any change that needs to be made can only be made with the consent of this government, and not to mention other governments as well.
But you could come under enormous pressure.
But look, let's just set this in context. This is in the context of negotiations that are happening in Germany in relation to a government that has not yet been formed.
But if this becomes an issue for that government, it becomes a bigger issue.
Can I just make this point? We have been here before. Mm. It's worthwhile saying.
President
we were here before in relation to other countries. things have moved on now in terms of the clear recognition of Ireland and the gigantic progress our people have made in dealing with this terrible budgetary situation.
Colonel O'Donnell.
And that will be four of mine for us, and I can assure you for Germany.
This is an internal issue at the moment for Germany. It's not. It doesn't involve Ireland directly. Our 12.5% corporation tax rate is a cornerstone of our economic development. What's good for Ireland is good for Europe. It's a riding tide lifts all boats. It's completely transparent, and both for the multinational sector in terms of the huge number of jobs, over 100,000 jobs here plus, to the indigenous sector, our 12.5% is a driver of jobs, of economic prosperity. And it's something that's as Pascal has said, is enshrined in terms of treaties in Europe, is the control and any changes lie with the Irish government and the Irish people. And that's something that I think Germany are fully aware of.
Leo Varadkar, are you comfortable with this, or do you see any threat at all coming from what's happening in Germany?
I can't really add to what my colleagues have said. It's one of the advantages, I suppose, of having four Fine Gaelers on the same panel is that we all tend to agree with each other.
Yeah. But one of the issues here, and Brian Hayes, I mean, the Department of Finance have been working on the basis that the whole issue of negotiations around bank recapitalisation, there was a framework agreed for that. But if this was to become a policy issue for a new German government, they want to link that to movement on our corporation tax rate. The goalposts will shift.
I'm not so certain that they do. And I think the last person to raise this in such a vociferous way was President Sarkozy. And, he's no longer here and we are. We won the debate in terms of the idea that we would have to change our corporate tax rate on the basis of pressure coming from anyone else. There's a recognition that whatever about changing a corporate tax rate in good times, it will be a manic policy, quite frankly, to change it in the middle of this economic crisis and create uncertainty, the kind of uncertainty that Kieran spoke about. So I don't see that happening. The fact of the matter is this, and I want to say this very publicly, the German government have been hugely supportive of Ireland, and the very clear relationship that Enda Kenny has with Angela Merkel in terms of the achievement of both leaders has been really, really important in terms of getting this country to a better place. I don't believe, in my discussions with the German officials and with German ministers, that there is some attempt to impose new increases in capital taxes in this country. And can I also say this? If one looks at the corporate tax rate, the good news this year is actually the amount we're taking in the subhead has actually gone up. There's an example. We've kept the rate and the yield we're getting is coming up because of the fact that
Michael O'Regan
is coming back into stability.
They all appear to be fairly confident. Is it well placed?
I think it is. I'm inclined to agree with Pascal on this. You know, when a coalition, we know that from the Fine Gael Labour talks of whenever it was 2.5 years ago, a lot of kites are flown by the various parties. And we have been down that road before. I do think, of course, if it did come to a head, it would be a real test of the reported very good relationship between the Taoiseach and Angela Merkel.
The other big issue that has been mentioned several times here has been exiting the bailout later this year. And of course, if the Troika are gone, who will be there to police government spending? And the government will not have at that stage someone to turn to and blame. Because up to now, every tough decision, the government has been able to say, it's not our fault, these are the people writing the checks. If we don't do this, we don't get the money. Leo Varadkar, how does the government hold the line? If you raise the expectations of regaining our economic sovereignty, how do you hold the line with the inevitable demands for more spending?
Well, it is a line that we're going to have to hold because, as Michael Noonan said earlier, it's not good enough to get out of the bailout. We need to stay out. And that means that in the years and decades ahead, we need to make sure that we keep public spending under control. It can rise year on year, but certainly nothing like the 7 or 10% increases year on year like occurred during the boom. Now, we will be held to account in other ways, of course. There's the fiscal treaty, which we signed and voted through in a referendum, and that puts in certain rules about keeping deficits under control. And there's also the discipline of the bond markets. You know, let's bear in mind, you know, up until, or at least for the rest of the year and for the last 2 years, we've been accountable to the Troika for borrowing. But if you don't manage your public finances, the bond markets can turn on you quite quickly.
But there will be an inevitable pent-up frustration with various people across various sectors in the economy who haven't seen much investment and who want a break. And if we're out of the bailout and if we have regained our economic sovereignty, surely they are going to pile on the pressure pressure on the government for more spending in various areas.
And they will, and that's why Ireland needs a party like Fine Gael, you know, to protect and defend the recovery. And you see it already, you know, one or two of the pre-budget submissions that have been produced by the other parties in the last few weeks are talking about abolishing the property tax or even refunding it. Like, that sort of stuff is just nonsense. And we need to make sure that we as a nation don't fall for that sort of rubbish again.
Kieran O'Donnell.
It's about striking a balance. It's about striking a balance to ensure that when you exit the bailout, we stay out of the bailout. It's about striking a balance that we produce the fairest possible budget, and we're doing that with the 600 million saved, bringing it down from 3.1 to 2.5. You have an independent fiscally advisory council there at the moment that will scrutinise.
But the government doesn't pay an awful lot of attention to the independent fiscal advisory.
In fact, it's quite supportive of what government is doing.
They actually wanted you to go for the 3.1 billion euro adjustment.
They did. Yeah. But I mean, as the Minister for Finance said, it's not really the 3.1 or the 2.5, it's where the deficit is. And he repeated again this morning at conference, as far as he's concerned, the key priority is to actually surpass the target next year and get it under the 5.1. And we think we can do that as a result of the tax buoyancy that's there, and also the improvement in the economy.
And also as well, Brian, they were supportive of the macro, we'll say, in terms of the projections underpinning the budget. So I think that when you look at, and Leo made reference as well, like any business, you have to be able to borrow money at low cost. And the markets will, I suppose, insist on certain targets being met. And once again, it's a balance. And we're coming from a situation whereby the country was broke a number of years ago when we took it over. We've brought it back now where it's solvent. And now we're moving on to it. We're going to have a primary surplus, which means in layman's terms that we're taking in more money than we're spending before we're paying interest. That's a very positive measure for the markets and for the country overall.
And looking forward to the 2016 election, Frank Flannery was saying earlier on that there appeared to be a little bit of a door perhaps open to your colleagues who have gone to Reform Alliance. Do any of you see them coming back?
I think the ball is in their court. I mean, this government is working so hard to deal with the difficulties that we have. We're going to be making hard decisions over the rest of the weekend, but we're very conscious that the people who have to deal with the consequences of these decisions, that it's far tougher to do that. And what we're trying to do is complete the work. And what I want to see, you know, colleagues or former colleagues and other people in the Dáil, it's up to them to decide how they're going to respond to the work that we're doing.
Leo Varadkar, do you see any of them coming back into the party fold?
I think Pascal's right. That is really up to them. I think what we saw in the last couple of weeks was a little bit strange. A number of them had to leave the parliamentary party because they couldn't stand over legislation to provide for limited abortion in Ireland, because, you know, that wasn't in our manifesto. But yet in the last few weeks, some of them actively campaigned against something that was in our manifesto, which was the abolition of the Senate. So I think really what they have to decide for themselves individually is, you know, are they independents or do they support Fine Gael?
They say they're not planning a new party, but many people look at it and think it looks to be the outlines of what might become a new party. Do any of you have a sense that perhaps that is where this is going?
I think, as Brian Hayes, both my colleagues said, that it's really a matter for our colleagues as to whether or not they want to do that. They are still members of Fine Gael, as in the many hundreds and thousands of people who are here this weekend. And as members of Fine Gael, if you're privileged enough to serve in the Dáil, I would have thought that you want to do what you can to advance the cause of the country. And the fact that Fine Gael is in government, I hope we can get their support for the key issues. I think ultimately it is their decision. I would like to see them back into the party. I think it would make sense. You know, I think a fractured Fine Gael is of no use to anyone. But ultimately it is their call. And I think there is a way back if people would support the government and do what they can to advance what is in Fine Gael's interest, which is all about economic recovery.
Do any of you see perhaps any opportunity perhaps for the Taoiseach at some point to offer an olive branch to them to come back?
Well, I agree with what my colleagues have said, but I think for the ordinary person looking in out there at the moment, and with the job, we're elected to basically bring the economy back and bring in budgets and measures that are fair. And really that takes all the concentration of government. I think the ball is very much in their court, and I think the government is getting on with their work, and we'll continue to do our work.
Michael O'Regan, from all you've heard, where do you see Fine Gael at now?
I think with the exception of Brian Walsh, I think there's no way back for the prodigal sons and daughters who left in recent times. Fine Gael going very well, very successful conference, doing well, relatively speaking, in the polls. Nobody nipping at Mr. Kenny's heels, unlike Labour, where Joan wants Eamon's job. I think they're probably the best time in the party's history since maybe post-77 when Garrett Fitzgerald took over the leadership and there was a resurgence of interest and popularity in the party.
And Michael, if you look towards next year, do you think some of them will be worried very quickly about the local European elections, particularly their councillors?
That will be a big challenge. And of course, the government of the day inevitably gets hit in the local and European elections. But a very interesting one, by the way, to watch, Brian, will be Máire McGuinness and Jim Higgins.
Okay.
Will she get on better with Jim Higgins than she did with Fergus O'Dowd and Loud?
Okay, that's our lot. That's our lot from the Fine Gael National Conference in Limerick today. I'd like to thank all our guests who have joined us over the last hour. Thank you for listening. We'll be back at the same time next Saturday, and I hope you can join us then. In the meantime, from all the team, enjoy the rest of your weekend.